Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
There you go. Introduce yourself.
Hey, it's a tornado, Tony Pennycal.
Yeah. The guy's name is Tornado.
Look at that guy. His name's Tornado. That's right, baby. I'm an icon now.
Repertoire.
You know, I'm gonna be the first signing autographs and shit.
Did you ever get to look at the actual footage of the game?
No, I haven't.
It sounded like the guys in the background of that clip were talking about you on the footage of the game.
Yeah. I had people tell me they talked to me for like a minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be the trifecta. If you get that tape, whoa, be a real celebrity. Anyway,
well, you saw the whole profile they did on me, right?
Yeah, that was good too.
I'm gonna send it to this girl now.
Anyway, are you familiar with a boxer named Tony Jeter?
Back. Looking at his record, I've seen him fight in person.
Yeah, I figured that you would come out.
So. I don't really remember it. I remember the card, but I don't really remember his fight. But it was one of the cards that went to down in Philadelphia.
Cool. Well, we have him on at 9:15, penciled in. So, should be a good go there. We got some big-time boxing up to talk about. We got Tom's going to be joining us late tonight, I guess.
Yeah, I saw his email.
So, whenever he pops in, we will cover the UFC news, which there's plenty of. But we got some big fights coming up this weekend and this Friday night even. A couple good ones. Victor Kaio is fighting on Friday Night Fights. Victor Manuel Kaio, who's 31-3, 20 knockouts at light welterweight, fighting Emmanuel Taylor, who's 16-1.
And Emmanuel Taylor is represented by my friend Dave Price, who I had to train with in Philadelphia. I know Dave talks about that. Dave posted some photos just yesterday after the weigh-in. They were having dinner. So obviously I'll be pulling for Emmanuel on this one. It should be interesting. I'm going to have to DVR it because I'm not going to be home. Going out for my friend's wife's birthday. And I don't know if you've seen my Facebook page lately, but I posted a picture of myself yesterday wearing a cowboy hat I bought in a party store. Because we're going to a Western themed bar tomorrow night, and your buddy the Tornado is going to ride the cab.
Yeah, I did see that Facebook post.
Yeah.
The Advanced Hospital Fund you're doing.
Well, what'd you say?
I like the Advanced Hospital Fund you're trying to raise.
Well, I told people, I was like, hey, if you want to send any cards or balloons, I said, once I get admitted, I'll send you my room number. But then yesterday, when we went to the store, me and my one friend, we went in there and we were just going there to get like these costume cowboy hats. But then I was like, oh shit, we went to the St. Patrick's Day section, and we're trying shit on, and we're acting up. I'm sure the managers of the store loved us, but we bought. We bought things, and we were good merchants, and we didn't bitch about prices. So we made a profit from us being there acting like assholes.
Nice. Well,
that's right.
Well, we got big fights tomorrow night on ESPN2. I didn't really get to watch a lot of boxing last week. I did see the UFC, but didn't see a lot of boxing. But I do know they got some big cards coming up this weekend. We got a heavyweight matchup on this ESPN2 card that's pretty intense. Magomed, I don't know how you pronounce that first name, but I know it's Abdusalamov. That's the last name. Heavyweights, 10-rounder. He is 16-0 with 16 knockouts, fighting Victor Bisbal, who is 21-1 with 15 knockouts. 16 wins, 16 knockouts. It's really not a bad fight on this card. It's pretty intense there, but there's another main event fight on Friday night. It looks like it must be Showbox. Hugo Centeno Jr., 17-0, 9 knockouts at light middleweight, fighting Keandre Leatherwood, who is 12-1-1 with 8 knockouts.
Let me get on the box track, and let me see if I can give you more of my analytical geniusness here.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Slow it down, tornado guy.
Look at this guy. It's tornado. That's the best line ever.
I love the way you set up that clip. That was great. His name's tornado.
So, let's see, you got Victor Manuel Cayo. I'm just trying to see if there's anybody I've seen him fight. He's out of the Dominican Republic. 31-3, 22 knockouts. All three of his losses have been by knockout. Last fought back in December. His last loss actually was just about a year ago, March 24th, a ninth-round stoppage to Nate Campbell, twice in round five. Also has a stoppage loss to Lamont Peterson on there back in 2011, and a stoppage loss to Marcos Maidana on there. Three big names. So when you have 31 wins and 3 losses, which are 3 losses as a 3 of either former or current world champions, not a bad deal. Has a win over Julio Diaz, who was 36-5 at the time. I'm trying to see if there's any other names on here that I recognize that he defeated. I don't see any. He's fighting Emmanuel Taylor, who I said is represented by my friend Dave Price, who I've known for almost 2 years. And he is 16-1, 11 knockouts. His last fight, which was a very impressive performance, was a 6-round knockout over Raymond Serrano. Back in January, and I remember even talking to Dave going into that fight, because I can, he said, hey, it's going to be kind of bittersweet because I've known Ray for so many years, and he's a really good guy. Pretty impressed. 6-round knockout. He had Serrano beat him up pretty good. His only loss was a split decision to Prentice Brewer, who was 15-1-1 at the time. So, and he's a young guy. He's 22 years old. Kaya is a little bit older, 28, but you still got two guys pretty much in their prime. So that's a really intriguing main event there. Also, as we said, you have Magomed Abdulazimov, 16-0, 16 knockouts. His last win back in September was a second-round knockout over a former world title challenger, Jamil McClain. He was down, and Abdulazimov was down in round one, came back, knocked McClain out in round two. Pretty impressive. But the fight before that was the one that really caught me by surprise. That's when he fought a former guest of ours, Maurice Byram, who always we always talk about because his father fought Holyfield, which was pro and I had covered one of Byron's last fights in Philadelphia. It was his first loss to Brian Jennings, but Byron still, you know, looked halfway decent in that fight. This fight, he was down in round one. He was all but out at the end of the round and stopped 36 seconds into round two. Pretty impressive performance by Abdulsamov. Now, he's fighting a guy by the name of Victor Bisbal. Nice little step up in competition. He is 21-1, 15 knockouts. His only loss was a second-round knockout loss back in 2006. So we're talking about a guy here who hasn't lost in 7 years. Taking a look at some of the guys he has fought, no real big names on there. Robert Daniels.
Okay, sorry about that. I don't know where we left off there, but...
Well, I was talking about the heavyweight today, on Friday night, and I talked about Abdulsamov beating our former guest, Maurice Byram. And then actually, as we were crashing, my computer was actually crashing. I was on BoxRec, and then I had to reboot, so I'm actually just getting my system back up right now myself.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
It's a system problem. It's not just me. It's a system-wide issue. We get some major winds going on up here. Not much snow, like Mass is getting, but we got some major winds.
I know Jersey got hit pretty good with some winds. We had some wind up here, that was about it.
Our tornadoes, though. We're stuck in Florida.
Wherever I am.
Anyway, boy, do I have Jesus Fight of the Week. It's actually a Jesus Card of the Week. Can you believe?
Wow.
From the Dominican Republic. There's not just one Jesus. There's not just two Jesuses. There are three Jesuses on this one card. The main event. Michael Oliveira, 19-1 with 14 knockouts at light middleweight, is fighting Orlando De Jesus Estrada, who is 8-3-1. And it's for a couple titles, the WBC Fekerbox light middleweight title and the WBA Fedebol light middleweight title. Whatever those are, anyway. Also, middleweight, 10-rounder, Giovanni Lorenzo, who's 31-5 with 23 knockouts, is fighting Jairo Jesus Cirrus, who is 20-15-1 with 20 knockout wins. It's 21 wins, 20 of them by knockout. You know, he does have 15 losses, 11 of those by knockout. And probably related to light heavyweight Marcus Oliveira and the main eventer Michael Oliveira, his name spelled exactly the same, but light heavyweight 8-rounder between Marcus Oliveira, who's 24-0, one draw, 19 knockout wins, and Junior Ramos, one of the top four fights that does not involve a Jesus or a Jesus. Junior Ramos is 10-7, with 6 knockouts. And finally, we have a light welterweight fight between Julio De Jesus, who is 16-1 with 15 knockouts, and Oscar Chacin, who is 14-18 with 1 draw and 12 knockout wins. And actually, there's one more fight on the card that does not involve Jesus. At the bigger bantamweight, Norberto Jimenez, who's 13-8 with 2 draws, 8 knockout wins, fighting Danny Aquino, who's 15-1 with 10 knockouts. That's from the Dominican Republic. If you happen to be down that way, Tony, you can catch all the action and all the Jesuses.
Well, I would if I didn't have plans this weekend.
You can have a come to Jesus moment. Some other stuff here. There's a pretty interesting fight. If you happen to be in Mexico on Saturday, you can see a killer flyweight title fight. Actually, no title. Main event fight between Edgar Sosa, who's 47-7, 28 knockouts, and Ulises Solis, who's 35-2, with 3 draws and 22 knockouts.
Yeah,
I believe
Solis is still around. He's only 31. It seems like he's like 131.
Exactly. And might just have the mismatch of the week as the co-main event on that card. Alejandro Gonzalez Jr. at bantamweight is 17-0, with 11 knockouts and 2 draws. He's fighting Alexander Acosta. He's going to get accosted because he's 1-7. Main event. That's a little bit of a mismatch. Not the worst.
On the positive side, only 5% of my knockout, so he has gone the distance twice.
Whoa. He's an animal.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a big doubleheader on HBO on Saturday. It's what I'm looking forward to. And it was, well, I'm gonna, you know, Bob, I'm gonna get your opinion on this one. You know, we got the ageless one, Bernard Hopkins, going for another title at 48 years old against the undefeated Tavoris Cloud. Pretty interesting. We got Cloud at 23-0 and 19 knockouts, but he hasn't fought in over a year. His last fight against Gabriel Campillo, a lot of people thought he lost that fight. And now it's like he had when he fought Glenn Johnson a couple of years ago. Well, that fight was pretty close, you know. So now you figure out 24-19 knockout in power punch. He's only scored one stoppage in the last 4 years. His he had one stoppage over Yusef Mack in 2011. He stopped him in the 8th round. But Yusef is a fighter that has been stopped before. You know, usually when you get into the mid to late rounds, he gets stopped. Not only that, you talk about a guy that hasn't stopped an opponent on the side. Now, Bernard, on the other hand, he's been around for about 52 and 2 draws, 32 knockouts. Has not fought since last April, lost to Chad Johnson. Bernard hasn't scored a knockout since 2004. That was a stoppage over De La Hoya. And before that, his last stoppage was a 2003 stoppage over Murat Hakkar, which I was actually at that fight in March of 2003. So we're looking at a guy that's only scored one stoppage win in 10 years.
Whoa.
He's crafty. Yeah, he's crafty. You know, he's a guy that he knows the ins and outs of the sport of boxing. Now, if you look back at Bernard's career, who are the guys that he has done the best with? He's done the best with guys that are very aggressive fighters, very straightforward fighters, very heavy-handed fighters, but not, sometimes not the fastest. You go back, he fought with Felix Trinidad. He was a 3.5-1 underdog. He let Trinidad come right to him, and he picked him apart the whole time. He was an underdog against Kelly Pavlik, figuring, okay, Bernard's getting older now. Pavlik's a young hot shot. You know, he's going to outwork him. What? Bernard picks him apart over 12 rounds. You know, same thing with guys like Howard Eastman, Robert Allen, trying to look at some other names, Antoine Eccles, he destroyed. Eccles a very aggressive type fighter. Then Hopkins, as he gets older, some of the fights he struggled in, Joe Calzaghe, a lot of movement, a lot of speed. LSU is going down here and tapped Dawson. Southpaw, just one with a box, one with a move, one with a use, you know, his skills. Very unexciting fights, fights that did not, you know, play into the strengths of Hopkins. Jermaine Taylor, for example. Jermaine Taylor was a guy that wanted to stay on the outside and use his jab and keep the fight at a distance. But Hopkins had a lot of trouble with, and they were not exciting fights. You get a guy like Cloud, who was a very aggressive fighter, a very straightforward fighter. Now, he's good. That should play right into Bernard's hands. Now, here's the other question is the work rate. Hopkins can't fight a full 3 minutes every round anymore. That's why he clinches a lot. That's why, you know, a lot of times he'll be looking at the referee and trying to get breaks in there or, you know, get his opponent penalized. Because at 48 years old, which is almost 50 years old, it's going to be hard to play 3 minutes every round. So now, I read a panel yesterday. Now, I'm picking Hopkins to win this fight by decision. Got a bet with my dad. We got a breakfast bet on it.
Well,
he's picking Wilder with my decision. He's like, Bernard, he can't pull out the rabbit's foot again. He can't do it. But I read a panel yesterday out of 20 respected boxing people. 10, I think it was 10, 9, and 1. Like 10 had Hopkins and 1 called it a draw. So, once again, you split on us. But Hopkins fought John Pascal a couple years ago. A very straightforward, aggressive type of guy. And Hopkins should have won both those fights. So we're looking. It's going to be intriguing. I'll put it that way. It should be intriguing. I just think the old man's going to be able to frustrate this kid, and I think he's going to be able to do more than Campino did. And I think Bernard shocks us again.
We'll see. I don't know.
Yeah.
One thing Tavares has going for him is he has a high knockout percentage.
Who's that? Cloud?
Cloud.
Cloud has a high knockout percentage. Yes, I agree with that. But he's only had one stoppage in 5 years.
Whoa.
Yeah, wow. As I just said, as he's stepping up his competition and he's going on the world-class level, you look at this. Okay, he fought a guy named Mike Wood back in March of 2008. And he stopped him in one round. Then he fought, a guy by the name of Julio Cesar Gonzalez, who, you know, was a guy that's been around a lot of years. He was 41-5. Stopped him in 10 rounds. After that, fought Clinton Woods, who was, former titleist. Decision. Lynn Johnson. Decision. Feliciano Zuniga. Decision. Then he had the stoppage win over Yusef Mack. And then over a year ago, when he fought Campino, it was a split decision, which a lot of people thought he lost. So now, at one time, you figure here's the guy who's 24-0 with 19 knockouts. That would have been 1, 2, 3, 4. He would have been, say, 20, you know, with 19 knockouts. You know, he had one decision win over your boy back in 2005. He had a decision win over Reggie Strickland, who at the time was 66-272-17.
Whoa. That's a record.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the guy's got an impressive knockout rate, but these were all early in his career.
Well, since you put it that way, I like Bernard Hopkins, too.
All right.
We also have Keith Thurman, who's 19-0 with 18 knockouts, fighting Jan Zvek, who is 32-2 with 18 knockouts at welterweight. That should be a pretty good matchup.
Yeah, Keith Thurman is actually a pretty nice rising star in boxing. Did we interview him?
Possibly. It's possible.
We might have, either we interviewed him or I remember reading an article on him. But, you know, you got a guy here, he's 19-0, 18 knockouts. I'm trying to see when he went to this, I forget if it was on like a Saturday night fight card. Let's and he went to distance. But, okay, he's back in the nines, and no, I don't remember that fight. But, you know, it's starting to pick up a little bit. We would say we got Orlando Moore, 29-2-2, mastermind 6 rounds. Carlos Quintana, a pretty decent fighter, 29-3, stopped him in 4 rounds. That was back in November. That's a nice little step up. Now he's fighting John Zabak, who's most well-known for his fight with Andre Berto. Zabak is 2-18 knockouts. He had a stoppage loss to Berto back in 2011, but that was due to a cut. That was a IBS welterweight title fight. Zabak was the welterweight champion, IBS. Apparently won it, looks like back in 2009, and he held it for 2 years. So, decent champion, not nothing spectacular, but decent. Lost it on cuts to Pomodoro, which is a pretty good fighter. And now, he's going to try to play the spoiler to a nice young fighter in Keith Thurman. Thurman's, very popular, 24 years old, he's young. He's, pretty much entering his prime now. Oh, shit, he lives in Clearwater, Florida. How the hell didn't I see him the other week? Let's put you with the Clearwater. He was probably saying he didn't want to get into the bar with me.
Well, what's funny is there's a fight on this card. It's an 8-round light middleweight fight, and it's the Gomez's. Eddie versus Javier Gomez. Gomez versus Gomez. I got Gomez.
I'm betting on Gomez.
Yeah. Eddie is 12-0, 8 knockouts. Javier is 14-10, with 10 knockouts. And I doubt they're really related, but if they were brothers, man, that would be a good plug-in point for this bout. I don't know. Kind of funny. Javier versus Eddie. It's all in the family. The Gomez's. Watch out. We also have Michael Perez, 18-1-1, who's got 10 knockout wins, fighting Lonnie Smith, who's 14-4-2, with 10 knockout wins at the lightweight.
Send a message to the Klitschko brothers. If they don't fight each other, so can you.
Javier is the underdog, I think. 14-10, fighting the undefeated Eddie. Everything now. What else do we have on Saturday? There's the IBF Super Featherweight title on the line in Costa Mesa, California, from the hangar. Good old Don King working with Dane Goosen. We got 12-rounder Super Featherweights Juan Carlos Salgado, 26-1-1 with 16 knockouts, fighting Arginus Mendez, who's 20-2 with 10 knockouts. Also on that card, Cornelius White versus Otis Griffin at light heavyweight. White is 20-1 with 16 knockouts. Griffin is 24-11-2, 10 knockouts.
It was funny. I didn't think about it until you mentioned Don King. When they did a press conference with Bernard Hopkins a few weeks ago, more money than God in the bank account. And, and we came part of Golden Boy Promotions, and, all these things. But, while he's still got a fight. And he said part of the reason is he still wants to get Don King. Not, obviously not fighting-wise, but because he wants to put Don King out of business. And because they had, King promoted Hopkins for, a year or two, ended not in a great, status. That little bit of a rocky relationship out there. But Bernard keeps going back to his fight with Trinidad in 2001. At the time, Trinidad was Don King's golden, his golden boy. And Trinidad was, Don King's, champion, and had moved up from welterweight and junior middleweight, and he's at middleweight, and they're doing the big middleweight championship tournament. And basically what they did was they had four guys in it. They had Hopkins, who I believe was the IBF champion. I think William Joffe was the WBA champion. Keith Holmes was the WBC champion, then Trinidad was favored to beat them all. So they go in the first matchup, Hopkins roughs up Keith Holmes, beats him up, takes his title. Trinidad annihilates, absolutely annihilates William Joppy. So now Trinidad, as I said earlier, went into that fight as a 3.5-1 favorite. And since this was unifying the middleweight title, Trinidad now being the WBA champion and Hopkins being the IBF and the WBC, this was going to take, at the time, the three major belts, because the WBO was still kind of considered a tier below them at the time. So this is going to be the undisputed middleweight champion, the first one since Marvin Hagler, and they were going to present the winner with a Sugar Ray Robinson trophy, and then it was going to get engraved. Well, when the fight was over, the trophy was supposedly locked in a storage room that nobody could get to. Well, the real reason behind it was King already had that takeover, and Hopkins is still pissed about that. And he goes, so I took out his boy Trinidad, and he goes, and I've taken out some of his other fighters. And he goes, his last world champion right now is Tavoris Crowe. Well, I'm cleaning him out, too. I'm putting Don King out of business.
Well, we're also trying to get King on the show sometime. You'd love that, wouldn't you?
Oh, I would.
Only in America.
I mean, you and I, me, you, and Tom wouldn't get a word in edgewise. We would just, look at the mics and basically we could go out to the bar and go out to get a steak dinner. We'd come back, he'd still be talking.
Yeah, we'll see. I do have contact information. I do run some of his press releases. We'll see. We'll make it happen. I'll just mention his buddy, Rocky Marciano. It'll be all downhill from there. We'll get him.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to have a special guest, Tony Jenner. I would have pronounced it as you would pronounce a famous hated Yankee in my territory. But thank God I talked to him earlier today and he pronounced his own name, so usually a pretty good indication of how it's supposed to be pronounced. That happened. So it's Jenner. Jeter. Jenner.
Are you ready for the upcoming season?
Am I ready? I don't know. I guess I've got to look at the roster because I see we actually got a Philly or two, didn't we? The Red Sox, Victorino.
Yes. Victorino. Well, Philly traded him mid last season to the Dodgers. Then he had become a free agent. And you're gonna like him. You know, he's a good clubhouse guy. He's very energetic. He plays hard. I don't think he's worth $13 million a year, though.
Whoa. Nobody's worth $13 million a year.
I am.
Whoa. You better call the Phillies. Negotiate your contract.
Last Friday, we did a show on Thursday night. I guess you didn't hear what happened to me on Friday. Your very favorite and famous co-host.
Not sure if I did or not.
I'm driving home, and I went to him in the morning with a friend of mine, and we worked out. And then we did a few things, and I was driving home. I don't remember exactly where I was, but I'm coming home, and I'm just pulling up into my driveway, and my phone rings. Private number, block number, whatever it was, unlisted, and it's a girl on the phone. And she identifies herself as from the Philadelphia Phillies front office. They have my information.
Yeah, you told me that.
I did.
You told us the story. They faked you out, right?
Yeah. Oh, it must have been Thursday then.
Yeah, you said it on the show.
Oh,
you should send all that stuff to the Phillies for real, though, and be like, is there room for a super fan in your organization?
Yeah.
I'll be your new mascot.
I,
it would be fun. I would just want to do it one time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The only problem is if they say, well, yeah, you can do it, but you can't drink, you know, when you're at the games. Well, fuck that.
I have one demand.
Yeah, one demand. I'm allowed to do it myself.
Right. Well, we've run through all the boxing we can run through here. For this coming week, interesting fights. And guess who's in the news for being inappropriate, would you believe? Floyd Mayweather Jr. Was not being nice to the wife
of
a boxer. Boxers. Who was fighting under his banner, I guess. Shauna Bundridge, wife of Cornelius Bundridge. Floyd Mayweather basically is a picture of him right against this article of him putting his crotch, like, right up next to her, taunting her. And he says it's because they were trash-talking before the fight, and she said that her husband was going to beat him after he beat his last opponent, which he didn't even beat. But there was some stink about it. It was at a February 23rd show in Detroit when it happened. Cornelius Bundridge welterweight title against Ishae Smith. As we know, Smith won the fight. But Mayweather and Bundridge's wife, Shawana, got into a little bit of a heated argument. And he put his hips in her face, according to the column. And it was while her husband was fighting in the ring, apparently. But anyway, Floyd Mayweather Jr., being Floyd Mayweather Jr., and wearing a hat that says money, power, respect. Oddly enough. And there's actually some pictures of this in addition to the most offensive ones. And I think the best one is the last one, because even Floyd says, well, oh, we hugged afterwards, and it's like the most awkward hug you've ever seen. It looks like, you know, Floyd is like, you know, being disrespectful, and she's trying to push him away. It's pretty funny. Not a real makeup session there.
That's the Floyd that will always piss me off. I mean, when you sit down, and like so you and I have been on conference calls with him. I'll never forget the one before his fight with Marquez in 09, which was right on the heels of the tragic deaths of Alexis Arguello, Vernon Forrest, and Mayweather's former opponent, Arturo Vatti. And he was very well-spoken, very professional. He gave poignant tributes to all three of them, especially Gotti, who he had defeated a couple years prior. And you get off that conference call, and I remember saying to myself, you know what? He plays the dick because he likes to do that as a promotional thing. You know, he would be a great guy in the pro wrestling ranks because he would be like the perfect bad guy, the perfect villain that, you know, you want to boo. But when you get out of there, he's really a nice guy. But then he does shit. You know, he gets into this hip-hop bad boy, you know, persona, and it doesn't help him that the two biggest influences are his father and his uncle, who I legitimately believe are very mean-spirited people, especially his uncle. His Uncle Roger, in my eyes, is a human piece of shit. You know, I hate to say that, but this guy is mean-spirited in the corner. Like, you know, like, anybody can work Floyd Mayweather's corner and he'd be successful. You know, you don't have to be a great trainer to work his corner because he is such a good boxer. You know, I would like to see what happens in a fight where he's behind on the cards or he's getting beat up.
And the fight that sticks back in my mind is Sugar Ray Leonard. And in that one round, you're blowing it. I can see Roger doing something like that. I can see Roger like, he's a bum. He's a bum. You're knocking this mother effer out. He's a bum. That's all we can say. This guy's a bum. Don't worry about this motherfucker. You know, he's a bum. What instructions are here?
Yeah.
Okay. Reconnected.
Yeah, I want to say to that machine, your menu has not changed since last week. Don't lie to me.
Well, we're back. And still trying to reconnect to the internet here. We got Tony Jenner coming on in about 10 minutes. We're going to be calling out to him. I just actually sent the text to make sure he's reminded. So we got that going on. While we're waiting for stuff to load up here, I do want to mention UFC on Field TV 8. I'm sure that Tom is going to want to pipe in some stuff about this if he's waiting in the wings or about to be. But I did see a pretty interesting story about Mark Hunt and his fight with Stefan Struve, nicknamed the Skyscraper. Mark Hunt is a little Australian guy who's fought in actually Japan before in Pride and all over Japan over the years. And it was pretty interesting to see him getting back there and fighting against a younger guy there and taking it to him, taller guy, Mike Tyson's punch-out style, the big looping
hook.
And he caught the guy on the corner of the jaw in the third round and hit him in the sweet spot, like we talked about, with the brain slaps against the side of the head so hard because you hit him in the chin. And this one actually fractured. And he had Mark Hunt just kind of turn, but Herb looked down. I guess Stefan Struve told him, yeah, I can continue if you can get my tooth out of my cheek, something like that.
Yeah.
So he was tuned up bad. And it was an interesting card all around, mostly Japanese guys fighting guys who were willing to fight Japanese guys. And, it was all around a pretty decent card. Some crazy decisions, though. I don't know. I did do the last fight of the preliminaries there. I learned, I think, a lot of Japanese. There are so many guys in the corner that they were showing, you know, with no translation what they were saying. I do know the word for cut man in Japanese now. Would you like to know what that is, Tony?
Yes, I would.
Cut them on.
Nice.
The word for cut them on. There was, I forget which fight it was, but there was at one point there, we're looking at this guy. It was like maybe 20 seconds into the round before the guy, first guy said, where is cut them on? In Japanese, but the only distinguishable word was cut man. Where's the cut man? Where's the cut man? He kept asking for him. And finally, like, right before the 10-second warning, the cop man finally gets in there and puts, like, a Q-tip on the thing. And then they go, bah! Roy looks serious. I thought got a lucky win in his fight. And Diego Sanchez has a Japanese guy that sort of tossed him around the cage a little bit, and I was very surprised. Takanori Gumi has been around a while, and Diego Sanchez on his home turf in Japan on a split decision in a very controversial fight there. Co-main event, I guess you could call it, third fight of the night. So it's the last fight of the night. I didn't think it was that great, but either way, Diego got a lucky win there. And of course, Brian Stann, boy, he did not do too well, Tony. And I hate to say it, but I think it starts because he's not sponsored by the Marines. He's sponsored by the Air Force Reserves. What's up with that?
Yeah, that's kind of weird. Because when he first started in, what the hell did he start in? Was it Strike Force? I don't remember where he was, but it was WEC at first. And big talk, you know, with the Marines and all that, the time over in Iraq. But I keep saying it, and I will continue to say this. He's got tremendous one-punch punching power. Now, obviously, it's going to be harder now than 5 years ago, but I still say he should have tried his hand at pro boxing. With his punching power, and I would have trained him because I see a lot of potential in him. I remember when he won the WBC title and knocked out the Rhino. One punch, left hook. And I just saw that he was less effective when he went to the ground. And I was like, you know, and not just the fact that I think he could have been a good boxer with his punching power, but he had a great storyline, you know, the U.S. Marine, you know, and then being a heavyweight, he's coming to, you know, bring the titles back to America. He's, you know, going to thwart the Russian invasion, basically. And, you know, yeah, it didn't happen. And I think that right now, it might be late to teaching old dogs new tricks.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do, but I would think one more loss, it's almost guaranteed he's getting thrown out, but he is such a character for them, such a recruiting tool that it's for them to do that with him. But Marlon De Silva, the old guy.
I didn't even know that he was still in. I don't know if he was still in the UFC, because I know he had some losses in there, and how quick they are to throw people at him. Like, I was like, oh, my God, he might have been thrown out already.
Well, we're going to get to a little discussion on that topic a little later because we can now see, riddle me this, Matt Riddle, the big firing. They busted for on their own test over in the UK, and I think in Ireland they had a fight. And Matt Riddle popped positive for marijuana. And a couple days went by. They gave him kind of a hint that he could come back to them. And then he came out with this interview where he just blasted them. And not too long ago, I asked, well, why do they have to cut all these fighters? You know, what is this? Oh, we have to make room for this group and that group, and we have to cut fighters. Why do you have to cut fighters? Well, Matt Riddle, I think, has tried to answer that question. I don't know how much of it is revenge factor or how much of it is pure truth, but basically he said that they're trying to cut the higher paid fighters to make room for the new fighters, that they don't have to pay as much. So it's all about the Benjamins, according to what Riddle says. So that's pretty interesting. And he actually thinks there's some suspicion behind them testing him because they were more like looking to get rid of him. So he said something about his creatine levels showing they were high, and he has no reason that would be, why that would be. So, I don't know. Weirdness going on there in that story. But it's one of those things. What are you going to do? Let's continue. And Dana White actually had some commentary out not too long ago about these cuts, and actually used the analogy of blood will be spilled. Blood will be spilled. More blood will be spilled, as in more cuts in the future. Like, he's really physically going to cut these people, too, with a knife or something. I mean, geez. Being dramatic. And I actually was thinking about concepts kind of interesting, but somebody else actually wrote an article about sort of the same gist of, you know, what if these demands that they put on these fighters now to, you know, win at all costs or be thrown out of the UFC, what if that has a reverse psychology to these guys and they start fighting way smarter fights because they don't want to lose? You know, they start fighting not to lose rather than fighting to put on the big show that everybody wants to see, because they just don't want to lose, because they know losing is like the precipice to getting thrown out.
You know what it reminds me of a little bit? Kind of reminds me of the Olympic boxing now, when they kind of turned it into that, you know, shitty point system with the people hitting the keypads and all that. And I remember some of the fights, I forget if it was 04 or 08, but there was a couple fights where a couple of the guys, like, were ahead by, like, 2 points, and then the third round became a complete piece of shit because that fighter that was ahead by 2 points played keep away, played literally, I want to stay as far away from my opponent as I can and not let him get a chance to touch me, hit me or anything like that. And, you know, the a lot of these fights that were not exciting to begin with became less exciting, you know, in that final round.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a consideration. The other thing is, it seems to me, you know, you call for these put-on-a-show fights where, you know, you get these guys charged up to beat the crap out of each other and cause injuries, you know, so then, you know, yeah, you're getting the show, but you're kind of getting screwed on the back end because these guys are out for a while after these fights. They've got concussions or suspensions. You know, these exciting fights, they hurt people. People get seriously hurt. So there's some parallels between the way that they run the UFC and the bounty program in the NFL that they busted up there. With the Saints, I mean, they're not specifically going out there paying these guys to injure other guys, but it happens in these fights that Dana White calls these exciting, you know, put-on-a-show fights. And we saw that with Mark Hunt. Broke Stefan Struve's jaw viciously. Which is a brutal punch there. And another guy broke his hand. So that's the other thing you got to worry about, is increasing injuries because you're hyping these guys up too much to beat the living piss out of each other. So I think they need to take a hard look at what they're doing right now and figure out if that's really working or not. Because I don't know if it is. It's my soapbox of the week. Are we still on?
We're still on.
Okay. Frozen here. I'm trying to get onto Skype so we can connect with Tony Jeter. Give me a minute now. We'll figure out how to connect him. Yeah, out here, I guess my computer is being deliberately slow. On Skype. No, I can't seem to get it to come up. There it is. Okay. So did you watch any of the fights last week?
I did. Let me pull up off the ones that I did watch. Okay. I didn't see on the Friday night fight. I didn't go out Friday night. I watched the Billy Good fight. And I watched the Friday night fight. Evgeny Gradovich. It didn't look horrible. You could tell Billy Good was a 50-step fighter because the fight was a lot closer than it should have been. Gradovich pretty much kicked the living crap out of him. Gradovich going in was 15-0, 8 knockouts. Good was 35-1. Good was the 50-cent fighter with 50-cent promotions. And even though Gradovich won pretty handily, he only got a split decision win out of that. But the right fighter did win. It should have been a lot wider than it was, but at least I can go to sleep saying the right fighter won. We also had Willie Nelson on the card. Willie, good country singer. Looks like he's a pretty good fighter, too. 20-1, one draw, 12 knockouts. He scored a pretty impressive knockout over Michael Medina. First round, Medina sprained or broke his ankle going down. But this fight wouldn't have lasted much longer anyway. And then we had the fight on on Showbox. And I'm looking to pull that up right now. And that was not a very good fight. I was out by fifth or sixth round. And I'm trying to pull up that guy's name. It was actually a pretty dreadful fight. If I can find it here, I'll break it down for you. Where the hell is it from? Basically, all it was it's a lot of fouls, a lot of just roughhousing. And the one fighter out there, I could not get into him. I mean, he was just a dirty foul-filled fighter, a lot of clinches, and I was like, yeah, this is actually a terrible fight. And maybe it was the fight on Saturday night. Let me take a look there. Saturday 3-2. I went to made the races that night, and my one prize horse named after my dog Vincenzo Bartholomew, he won. He was a champion thoroughbred. That's where we had the fight on Saturday night. We had Gary Russell Jr., a unanimous decision win over Vakasov Gusev. He looks to be like Gary Russell, still undefeated, good prospect. Won the unanimous decision, up in his record. If I can get it pulled up here, I'll tell you exactly what his record. He's still undefeated, 22-0, 13 knockouts, 1-10 round distance. Dropped Gusev in the third, but Russell hurt his hand, so he won every round, winning the decision. And then the main event was Richard Abreu, who a lot of people think was robbed last year. In this fight with Brandon Rios, it was a split decision loss. A lot of people thought Abreu won that fight, including the one judge who had it 117-111, but was outvoted. So in his first fight since last April, Abreu came in to fight a guy by the name of Sharif Bogurier, and it was 23-0. But it was a 23-0 that was, I think, a little bit overblown. Let's just say a dirty fighter. He was 15 knockouts. Most of us, we tried to fight in California, Missouri, Las Vegas. Some decent fighters, that'd be great. But he got out there, and he was, basically leading with his head, clinching, fouling. And it was honestly a terrible fight. I fell asleep by the sixth round. I just couldn't take it anymore. So Abreu, gets a decision win, but not really an impressive card. Nothing I would, if I had friends that were not boxing fans and I got them to watch that fight, they'd probably stay not being boxing fans.
Well, since you put it that way. I know we didn't talk about The Ultimate Fighter last week. We missed a couple of episode recaps between that week and this week. It was a pretty interesting fight. They had Thor versus Salmon, and the Salmon was swimming upstream for the first part of the fight there. Josh Salmon, and you know, he's a very cocky guy, but he was also talking about how many injuries he had in the episode, so it was interesting to see him be able to come back from taking a beating early on in that fight and win. I was kind of shocked to see that turnaround there. And then last week, of course, this just past Tuesday, we had the guy from New England, from Massachusetts to be more specific, Jimmy Quinlan, just do a real good job in his fight. Just totally changed the game there. He looked really good with his wrestling and jiu-jitsu. So looking forward to seeing what he brings to the table throughout the rest of the series. Anyway, I'm still trying to get Chad back online here. I can add a caller. You still with us, Tony?
Literally, he was with me.
Okay. I don't know why Skype won't come up. Full screen here. Give me Skype. I want my Skype. What's going on here? Another fight I wanted to mention last week from Bellator. Aid Awad versus Will Brooks. And talk about jinxing a guy. The announcers, right when this fight starts, they say, oh, the fans have voted, 96% of them voted for Will Brooks to dominate this fight. And of course, Saeed Awad comes in and demolishes Will Brooks within seconds. It was a pretty decent fight. And Awad was pretty stoked to get the win. But I love how they just made him the instant underdog, and he proved him wrong very quickly. All right, let's see what we can do here. Come on. Get this to work here. Oh, that's not. Here we go. Back up. One more minute.
Still no luck?
All right, back again, and it's working now. I have to reset my computer. Okay, Tony. We got two Tonys and a Rich. What's going on now? What are we gonna do? Hello. Hello, can everybody
hear
me? Everybody hear me?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, we got Tonys and a Rich now on the show. What you got going on these days?
I'm sorry, like just a little bit.
Can you tell us what you got going on these days?
I'm putting together who am I speaking to?
This is Rabble Rouser Rich Bergeron, and we also have Tony the Tentacal on the line. It's our boxing.
What do I got going on now? I got a fight coming up May 11th in Millersville, Maryland. There'll be a card that I'm promoting and looking for it to be an exciting night of action in Millersville, Maryland.
All right. And how did you get into fighting in the first place?
How did I get into fighting? When I was a kid, I went down to the Boys and Girls Club, and they had a boxing gym. I was swimming in there, and ended up having a 100 days, and did a lot. And that's basically how it happened. Boys and Girls Club.
All right. And you're just fresh off a fight with Jimmy Lynn about going into his hometown and beating him.
It was a tough fight. I mean, I beat him in the house that Lang built, the Patriot Center. He had had about 15 or 16 fights there. So, it was tough. And it was he's from Northern Virginia. So he basically has stayed the Virginia box. He's, kept Virginia box afloat. So, basically border saying how much he was on top of me. And I ended up still winning the fight. So basically I won every round except the second round when he dropped me.
Now, taking a look at that fight on BoxRec, it said you lost 4 points for low blows in that fight, and then you were knocked down in the second round. So, right, it looks like doing the addition on there, it looks like you almost had to win every other round. Were you ever?
Can you hear me now, Tony?
Rich?
Tony?
Which Tony are you talking to?
You.
Okay, yeah, I can hear you now.
Rich?
Tony.
Rich, am I coming through?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we have you on there, Tom. I'm sorry, I forgot to introduce you. Psychic Tom has joined the program.
All right.
Got with the program.
Yeah, we lost the connection.
There's Tony Jeter. Tony Pennekamp. We also have Tony. We have Psychic Tom on the line with us.
Good evening, Tony.
Questions.
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Good.
Ask him what the lottery numbers are.
Yeah, there you go. Congratulations on the Lang fight.
Good fight. It was a good win for me. You know, I had 8 years of inactivity off and on to my boxing career, so it really boosted my career in this late stage of boxing for me.
Well, you know,
so it's helped out, and it's helped my promotion also.
Well, you look at it this way, Tony. You know that you have the maturity now to realize that there can't be any wasted time. And I think with folks that have had a long layoff, and when they come back, they're far more diligent than they were when they were younger.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'll tell you what's helped me with people, you know, chronologically, 37, but I had 8-9 years of inactivity, so my body has not been beat on. Like, I haven't been in the gym sparring. So I feel so fresh. I mean, people could not believe that I dog Lang out in the fight 10 rounds. And, you know, in the 10th round, I was so fresh.
Yeah.
And I think that's just for the way that I live. Like, I've never done drugs. I don't drink or anything. So I think it helped me out a lot in that fight.
You take care of your body, it takes care of you. You know, it's an old... go ahead, Rich.
What do you love most about being a boxer and being involved in the boxing game?
I guess winning. I mean, if I had to sum it up, it would definitely be winning. I mean, it's just you got to think for that one moment, you're out in front of everybody. It's definitely a cool thing.
We had a similar answer a few weeks ago from a guy named Duke Rufus. Have you ever heard of him?
I haven't. No.
He's an MMA trainer, huge boxer.
I think a lot of boxers will give you that same answer. And, you know, I mean, I guess if you're making millions and millions of dollars, you'd say, what do you like the most about boxing? You would say the money. But at this stage, I mean, there's no real money. I mean, even in the promotions that I'm doing, I mean, they're just small shows. So that it's not like a get-rich type deal. I mean, you do it for the love of the game and for the love of the sport.
Right. Yeah, we appreciate that. That's, that's what's so great about all combat sports is so many guys get involved for the right reasons, and some hasn't really been destroyed by money to an extent. It's getting there, but, there's still a lot of throwback guys that just go out there and fight the fight.
I totally agree with that. I mean, I think boxing, more than anything, is always going to be like a poor man's sport. So it's always going to draw those blue-collar type people that just, you know, they do it for the love of the sport itself. You know, and they're just hardworking people. So, you know, I think that in itself is what's great about boxing.
Now, do you have any favorite fighters, any role models in the sport that you looked up to when you were coming through the ranks?
A lot of local guys. I mean, you know, I think I got tougher than anybody. I mean, you know, like I never was that type of guy, and I'm still not that type of guy. But, I mean, you know, a lot of local guys try to, I mean, when you're an amateur, you try to look up to and you see them in this area. And, you know, I could think back to when I was an amateur and I would look at some of the pro guys, and I thought they were, like, the greatest thing. Fast forward 20 years and you're like, wow. You know. what, you know, what was I thinking about the guy that was 1-4? But I mean, that in itself is just like boxing is just such a cool sport for young guys to get into, because there is a lot of little models and people to look up to, because it is a sport where, you know, the dedication, the hard work, the work ethic, all that, you know, encompasses what boxing is about.
Now, what would you say is your ultimate goal in the sport?
Well, I wanted to get 20 wins. First, I wanted to get 10 wins. I got 10 wins. Now I'm at 15 wins. I'm going to get the 16th win. I'm going to try and run off a couple. I'm going to defend my WBC second title, and they're saying I should bump me into the top 15, and I'm going to fight for the NABA U.S. title. Hopefully that'll give me a top 15 WBA ranking, and, you know, if I could run off a couple quick wins, I mean, maybe I could do an eliminator or, you know, fight somebody overseas, I mean, which would just be cool, you know. I mean, you think of all the time that I and other people have put into the sport, you know, it would be cool to do something cool like that.
Yeah.
My time as a fighter is coming to an end, and I will transition, and I've been doing really well. You know, we have done a limited amount of pro shows. We've been killing it on the amateur shows. And my wife owns the gym in Maryland, Club One Fitness, which is a huge facility. And we've really been, you know, running a lot of fights out there. And we got a bunch of pro fighters that train there.
Nice. Now, I always like to ask boxers, especially, do you have a favorite punch?
Probably the overhand right. I mean, all my knockouts were by with the overhand right. So the coaches in the gym call it Tony time, which is so fun. When they say that, I just laugh inside. Like, that is hilarious. But a punch ends the fight. Just put it that way. Any punch that stops, that's my favorite.
Exactly. That's a good answer.
Right. Yeah, and so the punches.
We still got the other Tony on the line, right?
Yes, and Rich always makes fun of me on here because I know way too many boxing stats from the big name guys, from some of the local guys. I'm a Philadelphia guy, and it looks like he fought there back in 2001 at the First Union Center, which we now call, I think, the Wells Fargo Center. But I got to see it live.
You were there?
You fought down at the First Union Center. I believe the main event that night was Thomas Tate and Omar Sheikha back in October of 2001. You fought, and I was there live. I was in the I wasn't on the floor seating, but my old trainer got me the first row, where like the not the balcony, but like the elevated seats were. Which were pretty good. He was friends with one of the fighters on the card, so he hooked me up pretty good. But
nice.
You know, I know it was one of your losses. I actually know the fighter that you lost to, Wally Buffett. I've seen him a couple times.
Yeah, whatever happened to that kid?
Let me take a look right now. Let's see. He ended up. He was undefeated. 6-0, one knockout. One draw. There, he had 7 fights. But he has his last fight was his only knockout. That was back in April of 2002 when I was at that fight card in Allentown. I was talking to Larry Holmes there. And that was his last fight.
He left the game off that home run.
Yeah, I don't know about anything else. I got to see him fight a couple times, and he was a good fighter.
He was really
like the fight in Philadelphia, which is considered a very popular boxing city.
You think? Philly? No. Philly.
Were you asking what was it like fighting in Philly?
Yeah.
It was horrible. I hate Philly. Like, I hate all Philadelphia fighters because I lost to them. No, it was cool. Philadelphia was cool. Philadelphia is a great place. I've been to the Blue Horizon. I've been to a bunch of different fights up there. Philadelphia was super cool. That was my first loss. Kwame Bumpus, I totally wasn't prepared. At that point, I was signed with Sugar Ray Leonard Promotions. It was a Sugar Ray Leonard card that they threw up there. They picked this kid, Kwame Bumpus, and Warren with Aaron Mitchell and other guys, and he was looking really good. It was just a bad fight for me. The kid to really fight. At that point, I wasn't mature enough to fight a kid like that, you know. And but it was cool. I mean, Philadelphia is like a great, great fight town. And whenever you fight a guy from Philadelphia, you know you're going to be there. My other loss was to James Cedric, who's another Philadelphia guy. You know, so I've definitely had some rough times against Philadelphia fighters early on. But the venue was awesome, and cool city.
All right. Now, is there anybody you want to give a shout out to or say hello to out there?
Just Jetta Promotions. I mean, I'm always looking to promote my Emotions LLC, Club One Fitness, my wife owns. And we're doing, this will be our fifth pro show. We've done about 17 amateur shows. We're going to have the NABA and the WBC at this fight again. We're going to have two NABA title fights, a super middleweight title fight, and, of course, a middleweight title. So it should be a great night of action. Club One Fitness in Millersville, Maryland has a really good website. And we look forward to be a great night, another super exciting night of boxing.
Awesome. Well, we definitely enjoyed very much talking to you tonight, and look forward to tracking your career here. And
definitely. You can go to YouTube. You can check some of my fights out. You can type in my name, Tony Jetter. Definitely people. Or Twitter. My Twitter is at Tony B Promo. We're just looking to really get Jetter Promotions on there. The good thing about Jetter Promotions is not only do I fight, but then we give, five or six other guys a chance to fight too. And I think that is in itself this grassroots type boxing what keeps boxing alive.
Yeah, it's always good to see a boxer turn promoter, because he knows where he's coming from.
Definitely. When these guys in boxing today compared to what it was in 2001, it's a totally different game. I mean, get on shows, you need to be able to sell tickets, you need to be a national champion, be hooked up with somebody. I mean, it's such a different game with the economics of boxing today. Being a fighter, I could really, understand the pains of other fighters going through.
Well, awesome. We will definitely keep an eye on you, and wish you the best of luck, although we probably won't need it. You've been racking up some wins here, so keep the streak alive.
Yeah, definitely. Follow me on Facebook, Tony Jetter. Definitely on there, and with that way, I see everybody. I really go hard on Facebook and on Twitter.
And as a Red Sox fan, I am very glad you don't pronounce your name differently.
I don't do Jeter. It's so frustrating too. I tell everybody I'm the less famous Jetter. Everybody's like, Tony Jeter. It's so funny that, like, my ring name, J.C. Brown, who was Sugar Jay when I was with him, he dealt with me locally. He gave me the ring name Bo Better Jetter. And it's so frustrating when people that I've known for 10 years, they still call me Jeter. I'm like, really? It's not Bo Better Jeter. You can't, like, say that. You've known me for 15 years. But, it's not Jeter.
Good. keep it that way.
Yeah, definitely. That's hilarious.
Right.
But yeah, it was great. I really appreciate you getting me on the show, and definitely whenever you want me back on, we get a little bit closer to fight. I'd love to get on Jenner Promotion LLC. We're trying to, you know.
Right now, we can't tell you too much about your opponent, except, you know, that TBA guy, he's a real pain in the ass. TBA. To be announced?
Oh, yeah, Dad, we don't have an opponent yet. We're still 9 weeks out. You know, right now, the Maryland commission is sort of a tough commission. I don't know if y'all with Pat Pinella, but we're still waiting. Now we're 9 weeks out, so we're still pretty far out. So hopefully we'll have somebody locked in soon. But we do have a super middleweight bout. Hopefully I'll have both contracts signed tomorrow. And this is so not a good thing, but I will release it today. Going to kill Jackson in a super middleweight title 10 rounds in a war.
Nice.
Two really good guys.
I definitely good night.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll keep plugging anything you send us, so keep us in the loop.
Yep, that'll work. Do you do Facebook?
Oh, yeah, we got Facebook / Fight News Unlimited, so.
Yeah, send me, if you're not on my page, please, you know, contact me so we could all be, you know, so we could stay contacted and I can keep pumping information for what's going on.
All right.
Tony, my crystal ball is lighting up, bud. I see a very good year coming for you in all directions.
I appreciate it. Thank you. And I hope it does. I was Fighter of the Year last year in the state of Maryland, D.C., and Virginia, which was pretty cool considering some of the people I beat out, considering
yeah.
I've been stopped the previous year really, really well last year. And I think this year will be a good year also. And then hopefully that will be it for me. We'll just wrap it up and I'll continue to promote. But I thank y'all. I really appreciate the time that you've spent with me. And anytime, I'd love to be back.
Yeah, we always like having
people. Yeah, LLC, Tony Shatter, Tony B. Promo, with follow.
All right, we will follow you. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Rich. Thanks,
everybody.
Okay, Tony. All right, there's Mr. Jenner for you. And
we have
a few minutes here to talk MMA. We've devoted a little to boxing.
You know, Rich, I have to comment about the show. It seems like whoever picks the fight seems to come up short. I've never seen a season quite like that. Think about it.
Oh, with the tough?
Yeah. I mean, because you always want to be in control, but I'm to the point now where it's just, I mean, really, what do we got, four in a row, I think, or five in a row, where the coaches' picks have just come up short. You know, they think they're going to pick off the easier guys on the other team, and I've never seen.
Well, it sort of makes sense that the story's out now that every single fighter from this season is going to get at least one UFC fight.
Mm-hmm.
So makes you wonder. You know, it's just definitely a higher class of contestants than we've seen in a while, and you know. Tournament format has been going back and forth since day one. You know, it's just little things, it seems, that make all the difference. And Quinlan proved that. Mm-hmm. You know, Clint Hester is not a small guy.
No.
Not an easy guy to pick apart like that. And Quinlan just kind of hung in there and did his thing when he had to do it. And, of course, we had the big UFC on Fuel TV 8 card. I talked about while you were off the air. The Mark Hunt breaking Stefan Struve jaw there. And they still have retirement requests with his win over Brian Stann. There was about, I think, three categories or four categories of fighters on this card. You had Japanese guys, number one. Then you had guys who were willing to fight Japanese guys in Japan, number two. Then you had guys who fought a lot in Japan. And then the fourth category was guys who were willing to fight guys who fought a lot in Japan.
That's good, yeah. Well, I guess Brian Stann is Brian Stann seems like he's headed rapidly toward gatekeeper status. But,
I don't know. It's a tough one. Tough one to see him lose.
Yeah.
I kind of was joking earlier. It's probably because he's now sponsored by the Air Force Reserve.
So I guess the question about Vanderlei is what's left with Vanderlei now? And if he keeps winning, where does he go?
I think a lot of it had to do with him being in Japan, where he felt at home. You know, it's just the right opponent for him at the right time, I think. Helped a lot. He likes those toe-to-toe type of battles, and Stann will go right in and do that, and usually he'll get the better of his opponents. But Silva had none of it, and he showed a good chin of his own. But went in there and taken some of those shots to get that far. You know, top two fights of the card were some of the best top two fights we've seen in a while on any card. So that was exciting. But then we had all kinds of decisions all night long. And I was surprised that not all the decisions went in favor of the Japanese guys. So we had a lot. Takanori Gomi got screwed, I think. Diego Sanchez didn't really do much that impressed. Gomi, I think, did a really great job in that fight, and he didn't get the win. He got a split decision loss. Yushin Okami beat up on Hector Lombard. That was kind of a surprise. That was a split decision. Taya didn't do any no-nos when he beat Mizuto Hirota. He won by unanimous decision. We had Dong Hyun Kim beat T.R. Baharazada by unanimous decision. Brad Tavares beat Ricky Fukuda. You don't want to pronounce his name wrong. You're getting into some trouble. He won a three round unanimous decision, Tavares. We had Caraway lost to Mizugaki. Tukudomi beat Cristiano Marcelo. And Alex Bruce Lee Caceres, I thought, got a gift decision over Mr. Kang. And then finally, we had Hyung Yu Lim. Marcelo Gumarais beat Gumarais, but the Japanese guys did well. You know, most of their fights went their way. That's a big surprise usually on any card with a lot of Japanese guys. It seemed like they weren't doing that well until they got the fight back on their home soil there.
Well, maybe there's something to that jet lag that they've been talking about for quite a while now.
I do remember somebody brought that up. Now, we're going to go into a little bit of overtime here because I did want to talk about Matt Riddle getting thrown out of the UFC. And he basically he tested positive for marijuana. Threw him out of the UFC, and they said, well, you know, go win a couple fights, maybe we'll take you back. But he doesn't want to go back. He spent his whole career so far in the UFC, and he's ready to tell it like it is. He says he's just 27, he's hitting his stride, and he's going to probably reject the UFC's offer if it comes in the future. And this is his exact quote from the article. What I see happening is a year or two from now, after I've won probably like 5 or 6 fights, hopefully, and I'll probably at the time say no, because I really don't like the direction they're taking the company. They're firing high-level talent so they can have lower-level talent just scrap, and they'd rather have a brawl than a good technical fight. I think that's going to be their downfall, because the fans are getting more educated. They're getting smarter, and they don't want to just see a slugfest and two retarded guys with brain damage bleeding everywhere. Riddle, telling it like it is.
Whoa, I didn't see that, but I might dispute that. I think that maybe there are more fans that would appreciate that than the educated fans. I don't know, maybe I'm being cynical.
Well, Riddle is not done. Don't get me wrong, continues Riddle. That's good to have when two guys are evenly matched. When you've got Division I wrestlers that can't take each other down and they are left in a slugfest, that's what happens. But then to have me fight Che Mills and then kind of expect me to stand in the pocket with a world-class kickboxer who has knocked out other world-class kickboxers, it's just stupid. You're asking me to get hurt.
Well, you're asking him to lose.
And aside from his aside from his obvious questions, Riddle also remains suspicious regarding the validity of his most recent positive drug test. In addition to what he perceived to be irregular handling procedures, the test discovered increased levels in creatine in his system, which Riddle claims to have abstained from since he was 16 years old. And now even lawsuit. A lot of lawyers think I have a lawsuit for wrongful termination. And he says he's not trying to go that route because I like the fight and I'm not really trying to bellyache about it. But at the same time, if I didn't fail a drug test and something was added to my urine like creatine and THC or something like that, then I would like to know. Because I just think it was really convenient. Then after my fight, Dana White was making comments, oh, maybe if people started fighting more exciting, unlike Riddle lately. He did a couple interviews and mentioned how I haven't been fighting exciting. And then just so happens a couple days later, I fail a drug test and I get fired. There's just a couple variables. It just seems really fishy, he says. That's interesting. To read stuff like that and to find that out. And before we go, I did want to mention one more boxing story. It's the Jack Johnson. And you would think President Obama would already be on this. But no executive order yet. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, Senators John McCain, O'Cowan, and Representative Peter King have introduced legislation that urges the president to pardon Johnson, who was arrested under the Mann Act in 1913, which bars taking women over state lines for immoral purposes. And so basically Johnson was jailed because of his romantic relations with a white woman. But they won't pardon him. Go figure. One of the most electrifying and polarizing world champions ever in boxing history, and they won't give him the respect of a pardon. What can you do? That's about it. That's all I got. We're already well into overtime here.
Mm-hmm.
Anything from you guys?
Who do we have on next week? Rich?
We have a woman who is going to give us the rundown about women in mixed martial arts and the UFC. Lisa Belkov-Snyder, I believe.
Okay, so that's confirmed, right?
Yes.
Oh, great.
We have 15 minutes with her.
Yeah. Hopefully I can keep my clients out of the IRS's clutches and have a normal show next week. Sorry about tonight, but I'll be ready next week.
All right. Yeah, next week is the night before all hell breaks loose, right?
two nights.
Two nights. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, till next week.
I just wanted to say, Tom, I'm glad you liked my outfit, my interviews.
Oh, yeah. That's classic. You said people coming up to you and asking you, hey, you mind if I get a picture? Yeah, because I'm incognito in this. Come on. Jeez, what a question.
That's what I say to people. It's like, I was at a game last year in Baltimore, and there was a person like snuck up behind me. We were getting a picture with my back, and I didn't know it. I went to turn around, and then they kind of jumped, and they apologized. I'm like, what are you apologizing for? I'm like, oh, we didn't know if you were okay with it. I'm like, why do you think I'm dressed like this? Seriously.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Well, till next week, Mr. Tornado. Stay out of Florida.
I'm going to try. I'm going to shoot in Florida.
I got a warning
okay.
out for
And you remember, we got Bellator on now, so let's enjoy it.
All right.
Okay, guys, next week.
We'll see you next week, or you'll hear us. How about that? You will hear us next week.